Thanks, Jason. I'm Ken and I'm an addict.
Hey, Ken.
I'm still clean and I won't be using today. I'm going to put my head on my pillow, having not used any drugs today. That's a promise. That's my commitment. That's what I'm bringing to the table today. I don't know about you. That's me. That's what's expected from me. In exchange, I hope that you're going to look after me. And I wanted to say, and I mean it, I don't want to be too cheesy. The people who came up and gave me a hug and said good luck, I really appreciate it. Thank you, because I am nervous. And I'm not used to microphones, but I'm ready to go and I'm reasonably at ease with myself. And I've shared here a couple of times, and I like to consider myself as a friend of this group, a supporter from here. I don't come here every week. I don't do any service in this group, but it's in here. And I like to get along here. I don't know how many times I turn up, but I turn up when I can. And I just feel, not that it's different or the people do it differently, I just think that they make a little more effort. And there are people in Narcotics Anonymous who are willing to make more than the minimum effort, and it doesn't half make a difference. It really does. And if you are at the beginning of your journey or you're back, welcome. And please, and I mean this, don't walk up those stairs at the end of the meeting thinking that you have to use, because you don't. That's my part of my message of recovery. It isn't necessary. I haven't found it necessary, and I know that it isn't. And there's many of us who are testimony to this program working in our lives. I'm conscious of my, I've got a cold and my voice sounds funny anyway, but a couple of months ago, it was the summer, and I was in my living room and my daughter's in the kitchen doing something. It's the kitchen and the living room are the same room, and she's doing something, I can't remember what it was, and I'm fiddling around on this group's website, and she said, what are you doing? I said, I'm just listening to see if I can find somebody to listen to. And I said, "Yeah, listen, who's this?" And actually, he's my sponsor. And she said, "Oh, yeah, really good, yeah." And I said, "Okay, listen to this one." And she said, "Who's that?" I said, "It's me." And she said, "Why are you talking so posh?" So I'm already conscious. I'm trying hard not to overcompensate for the stuff and for the accents and stuff, because I can feel it thickening up now as I speak, because that got to me a little bit. And I'm going to get the cute grandkids joke out of the way now, because they're great, my grandchildren. They're really, really lovely to me. And I was in one of my daughter's houses on an estate in the West Midlands, and it was the summer, and the windows open, and the little ones are outside on the bars playing, and I can hear one of the neighbours' kids saying, "Is your granddad from London?" And the little one says, "Yeah, he is." And then this lad says, "Is he posh?" My granddaughter said, "Listen, when you go to my granddad's house, you have to take your shoes off and leave them in the hall." That's how posh he is. So that made me laugh. And that's how some people judge posh. You know, forget social class and income and that. If you make your kids take your shoes off, that does it for my grandkids. I'm really lucky. I've got my family back in my life. I don't feel that lucky this week. I don't know whether I'm going to talk about it or not, but I guess I've got the ability to deal with all that life throws at me now. I haven't used for a long time now. I've done 17 years, so I should know what I'm doing. I'm not going to sit here and tell you that I don't. Please, I do, on a good day. And I guess today's a good day. And on a bad day, I'll muddle through, the same as everybody else. I've made a commitment to keep myself clean a long time ago. I'm not going to give this up. I can cope with anything. anything that life throws at me. I can deal with my adversities with a little bit of dignity, and I can move on and grow and recover. And I don't want to get political or anything like that, but please, recovered, recovering, it's three letters, I don't care. I know what you mean, please, I really do. It makes no difference to me at all. I know exactly what you mean and where you're coming from. So, as you can tell by my accent, I'm not from South London, and I can't even remember how I ended up there now. But I did a long time ago, 1985. It was Live Aid weekend. Who remembers Live Aid? Live Aid weekend. I know that I was nuts that particular weekend, and I ended up down here, and I never went back. And my using ended up in Peckham, Camberwell, the park bench, Camberwell Green. Fantastic place to be at the end of your using, because there's a few others there. The chemist, he's one side of the green. The methadone clinic's up the hill. You're at the crossroads. The soup kitchen, I don't know whether it's there anymore, but it used to be about a 100-yard walk. And if you're unfortunate enough to have been in court, the court is on the green as well. So you can walk out there. And everything happens there if that's your life. That was my life for me. It was quite a few years of it. And I was two, three, four people around a £10 bag, cans of Tennent's, dog ends, fights, you know, imaginary fights even, imaginary passers-by. You know, thinking that people who had a cooker in their house have really got it made, and how did they manage that? It was really miserable for me, and I... there were occasions when some event or some deep reflection or meditation on my part would kick a hole in that really thick wall of denial that was keeping me from looking at what was happening in my life. Something would happen that would kick a hole just big enough for me to be able to look through it and see the truth about what had happened to me and how I'd got there. And it was awful to contemplate, and it frightened me. I don't think I ever contemplated killing myself, but I do remember that they were really dark moments, you know, when the reality of years of active addiction, I had some yets, but not many, because I was nearly 39 years old, so I'd done a lot, and my children were in care. I wasn't allowed in... there were court orders preventing me from having any contact with them. And I'd lost my mum. And my dad had died when I was a young lad. My relationship with my mum was awful. And last week, my son-in-law was in hospital having a heart operation, and I went to visit him, and I ended up in the same hospital. I was with my daughter, and we're on the ward, and I get a little bit reflective. My daughter says, "What's the matter, Dad?" And I said, the last time I ever saw my mum was here, and I had the worst argument I'd ever had with her on that day. And it was over, Sarah reminded me, I'd stolen the lowest of the low, stealing off my mum. And I took her wedding jewellery and sold it, And it was getting to me in the afternoon. And I was talking to my daughter about this. I said, and I walked out off that ward. In fact, the row was that bad that the nurse had to come in and pull us apart and not tell me to go. But I think the last thing I can remember my mum saying to me was something like, "Get him out of here." And that was the last time I saw her. And I never went back. But that's what active addiction had done to me. And I'm not copping out here. I'm standing up and facing up to the truth and holding my hands up. The row was actually my mother, I think, trying to get some closure on, did you take the wedding rings? And my courage failed me. I couldn't do it. I couldn't admit it. And funny enough, when I took my first... step four inventory, it's very difficult to talk about, to write about that and talk about that stuff as well. But I ended up in a detox, South London, 1994, and on or about, I can't remember when, I'm not going to do the homework to find out exactly what day it is, was, but I know it was on or about the 22nd of July, 1994, I went to my first Narcotics Anonymous meeting, H&I, South London, big up for them, and here I am. And two people came in, and there was a chap who worked there. He wasn't an NA member. He worked there, and he reached out to me, and he had me in his little office, and he said, "Listen, Ken, NA are coming in tonight. They're going up into the games room. Do you want to go?" And I was that enthusiastic. I said, "Do I have to?" He said, "No, you don't. But I think you should." And I went into my first NA meeting thinking I was doing this chap a favour. Okay then, I like him, I'll do him a favour, I'll go in. That's where I went to my first Narcotics Anonymous meeting. There were two people there, five of us went in, I remember them, and three of us are still clean. One of them came back and he's clean now, so I don't know what happened to the other one, I'm afraid. But the chap who came in, who's still clean, told me that he hadn't used any drugs for 2 years, was going to NA meetings, was changing the way that he lived his life, was getting things put right with his mum and dad and his family, had a bit of money in his pocket. The character defect of envy was driving me through the whole meeting, and all I could see was like a good-looking young lad in nice clean clothes, and the two women who were in there were climbing all over him, and I thought that didn't help me at all. And, I did learn, actually, clean time is sexy. So at least for that you can hang on to it. So I learned that pretty quick, and he gave me the ump, and didn't have any spiritual generosity, you know, to say to him, "I really, really want to thank you for coming along and telling me that I don't have to do what I'm doing, and for letting me know that Narcotics Anonymous exists, and for encouraging me to go to meetings and all that sort of stuff." Unable to do it. Walks out the meeting. Something had happened in there. I know that I walked out there with some hope. I know that I did. I know, even though it was possibly just that much, it was enough for me not to have used since. I haven't used since. My first Narcotics Anonymous meeting, please, if you want to think that I'm giving it the big one, but feel free, I'm giving NA the big one for that. That is testimony to the Narcotics Anonymous program working in my life, and I'm one of the lucky ones. I haven't had to do it. I haven't had to do it. I walked out of there knowing, because the fella told me, and I believed him, that if I didn't want to, I didn't have to use again. And I went through the first 9 months of my recovery, first 6 months in some temporary accommodation in Peckham, fantastic. I'm back in love with Peckham, actually. Just lately, by the by. Anyway, I ended up in temporary accommodation in Peckham on the same estate that I finished using. And I don't know what was happening to me. I was getting along to meetings. I was lucky. Even then, in 1994, I could walk easily to an NA meeting every day. Easily. I think the furthest one, was Sunday night at Brixton. And I would have walked there for a bag of gear without any problem at all. And I probably did. So I'd have done that. I'd have walked there for drugs, and I was able to walk to Brixton, 3 miles to me. And that was the near. And that was the furthest I had to go. So I was able to go to an NA meeting every day without any difficulty. For that, I'm grateful. And I managed it. I probably wasn't going every day. Didn't take part. Not too much willingness. Hanging on in there, you know, little things began to change for me, but not quite enough. And what happened it was Christmas Day for me. So I'm about 6 months clean. And again, good old South London Christmas Day dinner. It's a big event these days. But then there was about 12 of us, really miserable church hall. And those of us without any life at all, there we are. Bingo and all this. Maybe even charades and that, you know. It's just really got to me. And then the green grass of home comes on the radio, and that gets me, and the old self-pity is really, really, really on me. And I'm lying on this little stage. Oh, my God, what am I doing here? It was terrible. And what then, to cap it all, what happened? My little recovery friend, who we were in the same detox together, and we got clean together. She was living in some temporary accommodation, maybe 200 yards away. So as far as I was concerned, she was mine. Comes up to me at the end of the night and said, you see that fella over there? I said, yeah. She said, he's going to give me a lift home. I said, well, what about me? See you tomorrow. And I just couldn't cope with my feelings. I didn't know what had happened to me. I know it was my first big resentment, so I know that. I really, really couldn't cope at all. And I didn't know what was happening to me. And then I walked home. 2 miles, I was seething with murderous jealousy by the time I got in. I was a really sick baby. And it wasn't like, you know, I'm not going to NA anymore. I think I'm going to start using that. But I wasn't going to go to NA anymore. How could they do that to me? How could they? Christmas Day. Christmas Day. Leave me roasting, walk home on my own. And I was really miserable. And I stopped going to NA. That's it. No more for me. I've had enough. Beware the power of resentment. I didn't know how to cope with them. I didn't know what they were. But I was learning very quickly of how destructive that they can be. And it stopped me going to Narcotics Anonymous. I stopped going. And my new friends in NA were coming round, knocking on the door, pushing notes through the letterbox. Ken, call us. All this, and I'm hiding behind the settee. Don't want to answer the door to them. So I've really got the hump with Narcotics Anonymous. And, at the same time, I'm letting the lads in off the estate to use the kitchen, start using the drugs, and I'm getting very quickly nearer and nearer to picking up. I must have been. I don't remember thinking, I'm going to be picking up, so I think I'm going to have a year. Well, I don't know, a couple of days to go yet, and I'll be. But that was what I was doing. So I did come to my senses about an hour after I decided to pick up, to use. That's it, I'm going to have a use up. Friday afternoon, had a bit of money, had a cash point card. First time, I don't know how long I'd owned it for, but I had one, and I was off to the cash point, get me money, have a use up, took a hostage from NA. Excellent. Off we went. And I managed, I don't know how, but we managed to talk each other out of it before we got to the cash point. And both of us, more, I suppose for myself, I ended up, it's not there anymore, but it was South Norwood, Friday night, in the library, about six people in there. And on that day, I went into that Narcotics Anonymous meeting and I shared there, I don't know what I'm doing. I really haven't got a clue what I'm doing. And if I don't start paying a bit of attention and, you know, take this recovery business a little more seriously, it's going to have me and I'm going to be using. And I know that I don't want to do that. I had listened enough. I'd been to enough meetings to understand and realise and accept that I was one of those people who was really, I might have had a little bit of power over the first one, but once the first one's gone in, it's good night, Irene. It's sausage, egg and chips. It's over. I'd heard it not hundreds of times by then, but I'd heard it often enough by then to realise what was going to happen to me and what happened to people like me when I pick up the first one. I didn't want that to happen. And as an afterthought, at the end of my show, I thought, I think I'm going to get myself a sponsor and have a go at these steps. And I chatted to one of these people afterwards, and I told him that I'm thinking of asking so-and-so to sponsor me. He said, I'll tell you what, that's a great choice. why don't you ask him? And I did, and he said yes, and he guided me through the steps of the programme. I think at 9 months clean, on or about that day, round about that meeting, is the day that I surrendered. And it's only me, and it's what I believe surrender is. You can believe what you like, and I'm sure it doesn't matter. I'm not going to argue with anybody over it. But for me, surrender isn't I can't do it anymore. It is not for me I can't do it anymore. I can carry on using, knowing I can't do it anymore. Surrender for me is I am not doing it anymore. I am finished. I've given up. I'm not fighting this anymore. I'm going to embark on a new journey. I'm not a soldier. I've never have been. I don't know whether there's any soldiers in here, but I think they'll tell you the same. Surrender. Nobody wants to fight. Surrender means we give up. We don't care what you do. We're not fighting any longer. I'm not fighting any longer. And still today, I'm not fighting my addiction anymore. I'm not doing this. I'm going to try and embark. I made a commitment to embark on my new way of life. The same as the book tells us, the same as everybody in here who's gone through the same program is going to tell you, try and get ourselves a sponsor and ask that person to guide us through the steps of the program. It's very, very simple for me. 1, 2, 3. What is my problem? What is my problem? My life is controlled by drugs. That was my problem. Is there a solution to my problem? Is there an answer to my problem? Narcotics Anonymous, we're not the only people, but Narcotics Anonymous believes that we have an answer to your drug addiction, to my drug addiction. There is a solution. Recovery is possible in NA. 3, what do I need to do in order to bring that solution about in my life? So it's very, very simple. I can understand that. And that was how it was broken down and presented to me. I thought that I was a bit stupid at first, but I understand why he did it, because he was absolutely going to make sure that it sank in for me. What is my problem? Can I bring a solution about? Is it possible for me to bring a solution about? Is it possible for me to recover? How am I going to bring that solution about? 1, 2, and 3. I committed myself to becoming an active member of Narcotics Anonymous, sticking around. I made a commitment to keep myself clean, and I've lived to tell the tale. And I went through the steps, and I gave it my best shot at first. And I learned with steps 4 and 5 that there might be things about me that I might want to change. I learned through steps 6 and 7 about what things I might want to think about doing in order to change, especially those things that were driving me, those defective, those character defects that could drive me. And when they were driving me, I was no good to anybody, you know, and I learned very quickly that with or without the defects, the self-destruct button is only ever, ever at arm's length away for me. I know that because I've reached out and I've smashed it a few times, really, and still thought to myself, how did that happen? What happened there? I didn't see that coming. But I learned how to make a little progress in making myself a better person, how to become a little less self-centred and a little more selfless, how to stop that murderous jealousy running me life and stopping me from doing the things that I wanted to do, and how to become a little more loving and caring and showing a little bit of willingness. You know, trying to admire and respect what other people are doing in their lives instead of letting that envy run it, and just, you know, how destructive and soulless envy can be. And I struggle with it at work, and still today it can really bring me down, and I have to keep working on that. And I enjoyed step 6 and 7. I do believe that I was told that if I get to step 6 and I'm not interested in changing, I need to go back and maybe do something else until I am ready to change, because that was what it meant. You know, am I willing to change? Am I willing to make the effort to make some changes in my life and get it done. And I'm still doing it today. So I'm still on that one, and I'm enjoying that one most times. And it's not so difficult for me when I come up short these days, which is often, like everybody else. That's good too. It really is. It's never good when it's happening, but it is good. And I had the opportunity to get things put right in steps 8 and 9, especially with my family. And my family is 20% Walt Disney, 40% Jeremy Kyle, and 40% Jerry Springer. And we are fantastic at that sort of stuff. And we're equally as capable of being really loving and caring as we are at hurling the abuse at each other and getting in each other's faces. I made amends with my brother and my sister. I'd lost my mum and dad. It was too late for them. I'm not angry and resentful anymore about my mum. I'm just bloody sad. You know, that she had to go through all that, you know, not knowing whether or not it was something that she could have done to have made it better. And so I'm a bit sad about that. And I had the worst row I've had with my eldest daughter this week. Unfortunately, it spilled over onto one of the social networking sites, and it really got me down. And I've had to delete her. daughter, fine. Friend on social network site, no chance. It's really sad, but there you go. I've had a sort of conciliatory text, sort of. The kids are missing you, kiss, kiss, you know, which isn't really, I want to hear, I'm really sorry. And I'll try and smooth that over the next few days. I went to work at 6 months clean for a huge institution, 17,000 of us, went to work on the end of a shovel, and I'm still there. I put the shovel down a few years ago. Well, Dave looks after me, so I was lucky in that respect. I'm not going to bang on, a couple of external things that happened. I drove around in cars with no licence, no insurance, no tax, no MOT. Used to go to court saying, you can't take my licence off me because I haven't got one. And, went with that one for a few years. And I was 18 months clean, Rotherhide Tunnel, the North End, went out the Rotherhide Tunnel, did a red light, stopped by the police, and they threw the book at me. No licence, no tax, no answer, and they hinted that this is the last time. We're going to have to do something about this. And I got really scared, and I thought I was going to get sent to prison at 18 months clean. And my sponsor said, listen, go to court, prostrate yourself, and tell them, you know, that you've done this all your life. You thought that you could get away with it. Clearly you can't. You're committed to making changes. You're going to get yourself a provisional licence. You're going to and I'm not going to bother you again. And I went to court and I did that. I'm sure, not without anywhere near as much conviction, but something like that, probably mumbled it. But the magistrate said, I believe you. I'm going to give you a chance. I'm going to have to fine you some costs, but go away, get your licence, and did that. So I went away, got my driving licence, it was great. So I just thought, blimey, that's fantastic, and took my sick book back, went to work and told them, listen, my name's not really Kevin. that was a big adventure. I know how these things come about, and funny enough, I don't know whether it's the same for other people, but this was round about the step 6 and 7 stuff, you know, about the making changes. You know, do I want to be more? You know, do I want to be a better person? So that sort of stuff happened for me, and So all the external stuff is fine, and I can manage my finances. I can manage the external things in my life today. It's still really, really grim when I can't manage my feelings. And that happened this week with my kids. I was livid driving down the motorway, and I was thinking to myself, this is the third time that I am coming down this M40 angry. This is the third time running. I'm not coming back. And I've got to stick it out, and I've got to keep turning up, and they deserve it as well. And I do love them, I really do. It's just as I say, the big difference, those of you who have grandchildren, they don't throw the past back in your face, but the kids do, because they can remember, you know, and they're always going to point the finger, always, every now and again. When they're angry, when they've got a bit of resentment, you know whose fault it is and why. And it's very difficult to deny it. And that's the thing that I have to learn to live with and accept it. And as I say, on good days I can. I'm finished. I just want a quick thing for my daughter who lives with me, because I never spoke to her for 39 days in my flat. We lived together and we went 39 days without one word. Proper. Dug in. A couple of months ago, proper dug in, you know, peeking out the bedroom door to see if I could nip to the kitchen and back before the awkward moments of meeting her. 17 years clean, you know, and I just couldn't cope with this at all. And I'll wait for another day, the funny story of how it ended. But today, she phoned me up and said... I told her that I was sharing at the big meeting tonight, and she said, if there's any celebrities there, Dad, bring them home. and she said, good luck. And I like that. And she's got a fantastic application on her phone that tells her how long the bus is going to be. So that was fantastic for me as well. Please keep turning up, and thank you.